Hey, good morning, everybody. It's Barry Brown from Zintegra. It's May 19th, 9:30 in the morning, bright and early for me in Canada, in Halifax. It's 8:30 Eastern time. So what time is it for you, Seb? Joining me as always, Mr. Perusaw.
That's great, Barry. Glad to be there. So it's 3:30 my time. So I would say quite early afternoon, but mostly end of the day already.
So you want to get this over and done with so you can go home and get onto your weekend. No pressure. Make this quick.
Sounds like that, but I have some stuff to cover still. Some reporting stuff I have to deliver. So now I guess I have about, let's say, 2 to 3 hours left, and then I'm leaving for the weekend. Definitely.
Yeah, I thought I saw in the community yesterday that you guys had a holiday, but was that yesterday?
Yeah. It was yesterday. Yeah, it was a religious holiday yesterday, and some are just taking a day off to have a longer weekend. As you are seeing me now, I didn't. But I'm wishing all the best to the people who had the chance to take a day off.
Right, because the reason I'm asking because it's a long weekend in Canada this weekend. So I'm not working Monday, but all my colleagues in the U.S. are. But you know that train goes both ways. So when it's like things like 4th of July, I work and they don't.
Yeah.
So we work very collaboratively together, but we all have different holidays because U.S. versus Canada kind of conversation. But that's not really here. We're not here to talk about holidays as much as I like talking about holidays.
I prefer to have them, to be honest.
Yes, I'm taking some holidays in June. My family and I are going down to visit Mickey Mouse and go see all the Star Wars stuff that they built. So looking forward to that.
Every time I'm hearing someone who is having a road trip to something like Disney World, I'm always thinking about the movie The Griswolds and the Wally World. So
yes,
that's something which is pretty famous here. And I'm always thinking about it must happen. It must something like this happening to all families who are having a road trip. I mean, might not be the case everywhere, but that's what I expect.
No, the longest road trip I ever did with my kids, you know, two small kids, I guess they were kind of 3 and 6 at the time. We did a 19-hour drive from where I live to Toronto. And let's just say that's a mistake I will never, ever make again. I'll pony up a few $100 for a flight. You know, 35 minutes into the road trip. Are we there? Are we there? It's like, no, man, we got a long way to go. But anyway.
I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. Yeah, I get it.
I got to pee. I got to poop.
Yep.
Yeah. Good times with kids in cars. Right. So for this podcast, we're actually going to change things up a bit. So this is our community version of the Agile podcast. And Seb and I were kind of chatting offline, and we decided, you know, with the whole release of Cosmos there's a lot of questions coming out about, you know, upgrade paths, you know, what's new, you know, how does this work? How does that work? Excuse me. What we decided to do is actually pull some raw questions direct from the community and discuss them mano a mano here. So I have 10 or 12 questions that I've pulled that. A couple are actually generated by me because I ran into a couple of issues, but I thought we'd just go through them kind of point by point and, you know, discuss what people are seeing and see if our brains, I'm not calling ourselves big brains here. I see if the two of us could come up with a solution or at least, you know, point the community members in the right direction. So does that make sense to you, Seb? We'll get cracking.
It definitely makes. And for all our listeners, we didn't went through the questions a week in prior, so we didn't write the answers already. It's pretty lively. So let's see if I can answer, or if we can answer everything. Let's go. I'm ready.
All right. So the first one I ran into, and this is not so much a question, but something people really, really need to know. With UMS 11, you only needed to register it with the license portal.
So, on UMS 6, you mean?
Excuse me. Yes, you guys.
No, good. Just asking. You might have your hands on private builds. Just kidding. that I wouldn't be aware of. But that's another topic. No, let's jump in. So on UMS 6, you had to
register with the IGEL licensing portal only. So what's changed in terms of UMS registration for Cosmos/UMS 12?
So that's definitely a huge change. So if you think back about the time where you had your UMS on-prem and you had your licensing deployed from UMS to the endpoint, you set one communication path to the ILP. So it was just asking, is there a new license there or not? Can I deploy it? Is it available? Is a pack there, etc. From there on, we changed the whole registration process to use UMS ID. And the UMS ID, even if we already had an UMS licensing at EM prior and UMS 6, it changed because you're registering at the moment and again, the ServiceNow portal that we are using to create the connection between all of the outside service that you're using as a customer with our internal process. And that's the biggest, I mean, not the biggest, it's one of the biggest changes that we had in our licensing.
So a couple of points to that. The UMS ID, it's not, you know, UMS 12345. It's actually a certificate file that needs to be exported from UMS and imported into the Agile license portal. And the second, which is the newer piece of it that Seb mentioned really, really briefly, is the ServiceNow piece. And that's the Agile customer portal. Your UMS has to be registered there in order to take advantage of the Cosmos features, specifically, I was going to say App Store again. I got to stop doing that, but the app portal. So that's
something that's come up. We all do the same. Or I'm still doing it. So I'm not blaming you. I'm thinking the same. Just because you mentioned it, and it's really important, the UMS licensing ID is, as we mentioned it partially in the community already, is a unique ID. So it's always good to have the ID backupped. It's not something that we are mentioning too often, but we have a second tool inside of your UMS installation, which is called the UMS administrator. And from there, you can also create a backup of your UMS licensing ID. Just in case you have to reinstall the server, you have to do a rollback and bring the service back on another server that you might change. And it's always good to have a backup of it so you can restore it afterwards. Just a pro tip on the side.
Yeah. And you know what they say about backups? Backups are no good. Backups don't mean a thing until you can actually restore from a backup. So test your restores, people. Important. The second one, this is probably the most common one I've seen in the community since the release of Cosmos, is the option to create your profiles within, you know, the Java console or the old console that we were calling it, is grayed out. So what's that all about? You know, why can't I create my profiles in what are we calling the thick client, Seb? Is it the Java console we're calling it?
That's exactly true. That's how we call it also internally. In former times, we just called it the console, full-blown console, installation console. But in the meantime, thanks to the WUMS, so the web UMS, we really switched the term. So we have the web UMS and we have the Java console. And you just mentioned one thing regarding the Java console. I would happy to say that we are just forbidding you from creating a profile in the Java console, but that's not that true. We have at the moment a quite difficult situation where we have our UMS 12 and OS 12, and we have the, I would say, not, don't get me wrong, but the old world, which is OS 11 and the UMS 6, and the whole communication path between both products are absolutely different. So we don't have exactly feature parity between the web UMS and the Java console. So for the moment, you still have in some part of your configuration to jingle with both worlds. And that's where we said it doesn't make sense to integrate the OS 12 profile or configuration creation in the Java console, because this console will, on mid to long term, die. If you ask me, I liked it because I grew up with the Java console, so I'm still missing this gray, old-fashioned stuff. But at the same time, I have seen what our UX team is doing on the web UMS, and believe me, there is a huge change coming up and you're not prepared to it.
Okay. So I know a question coming from someone in the VIP group is dark mode coming? You know exactly who I'm talking about.
I'm definitely knowing. Hey, Leon. So yes, the short answer. The long answer is it will come together with the UX redesign that I just mentioned. And the theming process, which also includes the dark mode, also visual DESIs. So if you can't look at specific colors or recognize a specific color, is something that will integrate. Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm colorblind. Quick aside, straight out of high school, I wanted to go into electrical engineering. And, you know, I was accepted into the program, first day of school, colorblind test, failed it. I was like, ooh, time to rethink my career path. So I have real difficulty seeing red, green. And for a guy who works in IT, you know, you go into a data center, you know, red usually means bad, green is good. And all you see is lights, right? So.
Okay. But I mean, good to know, because then this new focus will also cover a little bit of your needs, because we have high contrast, we have different theming, which will better fit in. And if something is not covered, we'll be more flexible in integrating that. So think about the CSS, that the kind of language and configuration language that we have in the background. So everything that we are doing there is based on CSS. So the change of colors now is just a, I'm not saying it's just a one-click thingy, but more or less. So really looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Anything we can do.
But yes, coming to your point, DAC mode is coming.
Yes, because that's going to make Leon very, very happy. We talked about it in a previous podcast, that, but I believe that the ultimate goal here is to have the web console have complete parity with the Java console. Is that right? Or am I lying? I saw, looking at your face, I think I made something up.
Nah, I mean, the Java console itself is a pretty old-fashioned way to configure our devices, but I still like it. So we have to say, and to stay honest, the WebQMS as it is at the moment is still lacking some features, right? So the first thing that the old-fashioned UMS administrator, so someone who used the UMS for more than 1 year, will do is right-click the device, right, in the WebQMS, because you're just used to. And I'm doing that all the time and saying, oh, damn it, it's just a context menu of my web browser, which doesn't help for the Azure configuration. And that's the kind of things which are coming. I can't tell if it's the next release, but will come at the end of the year. And we are improving that from step by step by step. So be expected that there will be a huge change.
Fantastic. Another huge one I'm seeing in the community, high-level questions is customers, they're trying to get to... They use the OSC, the operating system creator, they create an iJaw thing client, and they boot it up, everything's gold, they go through the onboarding service, and then they try and download an app from the App Store. And, you know, it doesn't work for whatever reason. You know, this error is shown. The issue here that I'm seeing 9 times out of 10 is they're running on what's called, I believe it's called the starter license. So at the end of the OBS, they actually have to go through the process of registering the device with iJaw to get, do you know what the license is called that they actually get for the 90 days?
It's a demo license, that case, 90 days demo license.
So we need to get a demo license in place in order to take advantage of the App Store functionality. And I think that this has been covered in some new documentation by Ron. That wasn't there in the early days. So that's a big one. I see a lot of customers within Zintegra and within the community seeing, oh, why isn't the App Store working? I'm like, just go through a couple of other steps and get yourself the demo license and you're off to the races.
So just to think back about what the starter license was and still is, the starter license was introduced to give you, let's say, kind of anonymous way to use the product and evaluate it. But it always had a huge disadvantage in regards of features. You could use the Azure OS itself. Well, it was absolutely great, but you had no multimedia codec pack, which is key. If you want to use anything which is related to multimedia, to unified communication, redirection optimization, and so on. So I'm not a big fan of the starter license at all, to be honest. I prefer to have the 90 days license, or if you have a virtual machine that you're evaluating, you can just go to community-nfr and our Azure community and have access to your NFR license, which is a full set license, which you can use for 3 years. Just a side note. But coming back to your point, that's exactly true. The starter license is really, it's a basic one. Just say, you want to get the device up and running, just boot it up and have some configurations made locally, then great. For everything else, please use 90 days.
Right, yeah. And I highly recommend people, you know, complete that final step of creating the license. I think when I did it, it took me 45 seconds, an additional 45 seconds during the onboarding service. But it's just, it'll save you some headaches on why things may or may not work.
I agree.
So pro tip from the community there, pick the extra time. This is a one-liner question that I saw 3 times already is, where is Improvata in OS 12?
I mean, we can start to look at it right now and evaluate if the binaries are there, but the short answer is not there. The longer answer is it will be there, but for the moment, we are still evaluating in which kind of manner we will integrate it. Because as you might know, we have different discussions regarding the Improvata agent. We have the so-called appliance mode where the Improvata is sitting in. And then we have the PIE approach, which will have the Improvata feature set, but without the appliance mode. So that's a kind of a short teaser and extremely summarized. But that's where we are at the moment. And for the moment, we don't have it in OS 12. But as many other features, no, I shouldn't say it this way, but as some other features, We are working on it to get them the product as soon as possible. And that's where, I mean, even if our listeners are listening to us because we stay honest and transparent, we had the discussion already also how fast will Agile then deploy new applications like the new Citrix Workspace app client and so on. And I must admit, yes, I would have expected to have them faster than before, because in prior times we had the private build, which was just a kind of a one-time configuration available to the market. And now we have an application which requires, in my opinion, definitely less time to create than before. We are not there, to be absolutely crystal clear, but I hope to be there on track as soon as possible. So is there a release of Citrix Workspace app 2 days after that we should expect it as an app in our app portal?
So long story short, it's coming. So sit tight for the Improvata users, your Citrix users, Horizon users, ready to rock and roll. Day two support for the latest clients, and Improvata is coming along.
Improvata is key, by the way. I mean, more or less every healthcare customer in Europe, and I'm expecting the same in North America, is using Improvata. So if you ask me, it should have been there from the beginning on, but we had to focus on specific applications. And I mean, I'm taking over maybe a question that you might also have, but why didn't we integrate ADP, like an example? Why didn't we integrate Firefox browser from the beginning on? If you ask me, there is no reason. But obviously, if you ask product management, there is a reason. Yeah, and we had to take our time frame to deliver the product to the market as tight as possible. That's not a huge surprise. All software vendors are doing that, but we had to focus on MVP. So which kind of programs are most valuable to our program? And that's where we said, okay, ADP. Yes, we have a lot of customers using it, but we are focusing on AVG and cloud services. So let's push AVG first and then see how we can integrate ADP afterwards. And the same for Improvata. We knew that the one-time shot would be there to deliver OS, Agile OS 12 with Citrix and so on. But some stuff which takes longer to integrate will be then published afterwards.
Understood. Yeah, and to your point, you know, Improvata is everywhere in healthcare. So I suspect with the number of Agile endpoints sitting in hospitals, in doctor's office and whatnot, it's higher priority on the development team's list than something less prevalent. I'm just guessing. I don't know, but that's my suspicion.
I agree.
This last one, we internally at Zintegra actually ran into. So we've been kind of, you know, kicking the tires fairly heavily on UMS, and I've been installing it in Azure and AWS on my home lab. So I actually ran into an issue when I was hammering it a little bit, that there's a lockout feature that is may or may not be a documented feature, where if I try to log in as UMS administrator, whatever it is, you know, three times within 5 minutes with bad passwords, it actually locks you out. So there's a screenshot of it in the community. But what I was really interested in, see, for labbing purposes, how do I bypass that? Can I change the number of attempts before locked out? Because from an architectural perspective, I was actually quite concerned when I saw that the UMS web app is a web app, but needs to be exposed in order for devices to register via OBS. So I guess the the long and short of it is, can that be configured, the lockout number of attempts? Can you change the time of being, the length of time that you're locked out?
To be absolutely honest, I would have to double check before giving a 100% bulletproof answer. But this brute force protection was introduced already in UMS 6, if I remember right. I checked already a couple of times the knowledge base, but I couldn't find a corresponding article. So please, don't take it as a fact, but we introduced it, I guess, in 6.10 something. And in that version, it was just kind of we just wanted a brute force and no configuration behind it. So for the moment, in my view, but again, take it with caution, it's not configurable. The only thing that you could do is to check the database where there was a kind of a counter, but I didn't found the corresponding field until now. So I would say, yes, there might be a way, but I didn't have the chance to check the database until now.
Okay. So long story short, there's no pretty way to unlock it quickly.
Yeah. But I would definitely encourage you and other people who are listening to our podcast, if you have such kind of feature that you are not seeing in our product, but you want to get it because it makes sense to your business or to your company and maybe to others, just use ids.agilecommunity.com where you can post and upvote also other IDs coming from the market, coming from our customer base. And what's that's the kind of stuff.
It's ideas.
ids.agilecommunity.com.
Okay. I'll post a link to that in the show notes for this episode. Cool. Okay.
Would love it.
Another one I've seen quite a fair bit is during the onboarding process of an Agile endpoint, for, again, talking about 12, is customers are getting asked to input a communication token. So, you know, maybe you can explain, you know, what the communication token is and why it's needed and how we can avoid that going forward.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a good one. I would have to search for some specific terms. Give me a second. Let's jump to the next question. I will come back to that one in a second because I need some documentation to make it absolutely clear. And I will send the links in the chat. But yeah, we can definitely go to the next one. And as our listeners are seeing, it's not prepared. So it's definitely lively.
It's live on a Friday morning. All right. This one is pretty black and white, pretty brutally straightforward. Are custom partitions dead when it comes to Agile OS 12?
No, they're not dead. They're still there. You can still use and deploy them. So we have to differentiate between two things. The custom partition process, which is basically deploying a portable version of an application to the Agile operating system, is still available. So you can still deploy that feature and you can still use it on Agile OS. The thing that is not sure for the moment, and I would call it not true, not saying that we are thinking about removing or keeping it forever, but which is not sure is with the custom partition process, the deployment will be available in 5 years still. Because what we are doing at the moment is to use our app SDK. And the app SDK is more or less the modern way to create an application that you can then deploy via the App Store, your private one or the official one, to your endpoint. And that's how, like, I don't know, EPOS or who I'm thinking out, ControlUp are doing that, right? So they're getting our SDK, they're getting a way to create their own application. They're reviewing it, signing it, and sending it back to us so we can know, okay, it's coming from that vendor. And that's how definitely it will work in the future. But if you ask me, it's still a good thing to have the custom partition process inside of AgileOS because the custom partition itself is basically in the first step just to create a mountable and writable partition on your hard disk. And that's something that you need still because you might have to store local data. You need to push some videos to your endpoint if you're using as a digital signage. So that makes sense. Is the way how we created custom partition on OS 11 still making sense on OS 12 in future? If you ask me, I don't think so. But you will still have applications which are not SDK compatible or which might not work there. And that's where I'm saying custom partition in a way should stay.
Yeah, I think that's going to make a lot of customers happy because when word first got out about the app portal, customers were saying, oh, no, do I have to publish all my applications through this app portal now? So it's great to hear that the custom partition concept isn't going away. It's still there available for customers who need it, who may have, you know, homegrown apps or just want to install apps locally.
So absolutely correct.
All around. This kind of follow-up to that is there's been a lot of questions in the community around with the universal protocol, I think is what we're calling it.
Unified protocol. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for ICG, where now devices can register with UMS web app? So follow-up question, is ICG dead or going to die?
That's a tough question. And if you ask Agile employees, you might get 2 to 3 different answers to the questions, to be honest. I would split the answer in 2 sections. So if you're a standard customer who are not dealing with extremely high security driven requirements, I would say that the ICG might be dead for you because you don't want to put a separate virtual machine in your DMZ. You don't have maybe the availability to do so. You want to get your own hand on the machine and not someone from the server team, which will then patch and keep the machine up and running. that's where I'm saying you might not use the ICG anymore. But for all the others who are still wanting to have a differentiation between the outside world and the inside world. So speaking about a device working from home and the UMS, which is in your data center, and you don't want to have a direct communication from the UMS to the outside world. That's where I'm saying the ICG still makes sense, because you will have a kind of relay, which is not the UMS itself, but another server. So if someone would like to get their hands on your data center, they first have to hack your ICG and in some weird way come back to your UMS, which usually is not possible because the UMS is communicating via a WebSocket with the ICG server. So it's an outgoing connection. I mean, even if you're an extreme hacker, you might get that, but yeah, I don't expect to do so. So that's why the ICG definitely still makes sense.
Okay, I get that. So it still serves the proxy function and avoids you having to expose UMS, right?
Okay. That's absolutely true.
Okay, so Seb, I'm an OS 11 customer. I'm on UMS 6 OS 11. What are my migration paths to get to Cosmos? You know, can I just does that mean reflashing on my devices? Install UMS over top, or you know, what's the recommended procedure to actually go through the upgrade process for both iGEL OS and UMS?
First of all, backups.
and restores.
After that, we can start the discussion with everything. So from the UMS side, it's really just checking that your actual UMS server is holding the required specifications, like enough RAM, so enough memory, enough CPU, etc. If you have that and enough disk space, obviously, from there on, just download the installer for Linux or for Windows. Execute it, next, finish, that's it more or less. But I have to re-say it. Check, please, these requirements, because if you're coming from an old UMS 6, like an example, you might still have 8 GB of RAM for your Windows machine, and it was good. But in the future, believe me, it would not be enough. So you have to be at least 12 GB of RAM only for our processors. So double check that. If you did that, just click next, and you're good.
Just let me mention something here. I actually went through the documentation for UMS 12, and it's very, very precise. It requires 9 GB of memory, which I've never seen before. So it's 9 gigs it needs, as opposed to, you know, most applications are 8, 16, 32. But no, true. It's architected to be 9 gigs. So I thought that was really interesting and very precise.
Yeah, I guess it was a kind of, we tried to keep it as low as possible. And we said, okay, what could be the lowest number we could use? But yeah, you're right. I never thought about that, but this is true. It's a kind of a German approach, I guess.
Yes. I'm glad you said it.
No, you might be right on that. I definitely agree. Now, and that's basically what the thing that you have to think about. I would maybe mention also, if you're using still iGEL OS 5 or iGEL OS 10 devices, iGEL OS 5 was already a pain with UMS 6, so you had to adapt a specific Tomcat value. Honestly, I would try to avoid that with UMS 12. So just in case, that might be the only reason why I'm saying don't upgrade. Please upgrade instead your devices to OS 11 or OS 12, but that's another topic. And I want to say something. Second thing is, if you're using OS 10, OS 10 will still function with UMS 12, even if we don't have support for that OS 10 communication anymore. So just be aware that it might be worth to check which kind of firmware you're using. But from there on, now we are coming from the UMS to the endpoint. And now you might ask at the beginning, what are my migration path from OS 11 to OS 12 at the moment? To be crispy clear, there is no migration path for the moment where you can directly update from OS 11 to OS 12. That's a hard one, I know. And if you asked most of our pre-sales, advanced services, and community the members, you will see that we're not happy with that, but still we can't change it. So there is something planned for, I would say, end of the year. I will not give you too much time frame, but end of the year, that there will be something like that in the future. But for the moment, the only way to get an OS 11 device to OS 12 is to reflash the device by using PXE. Well, we are already providing a kind of configuration generator from the UMS side, or using a USB stick or SSM integration, as you already did.
Okay. It's not on my list of things to talk about here, but you made something that's interesting there. You talk about Pixie booting. So has iGEL upgraded the version of their appliance for deployment?
Deployment appliance.
What it's called.
Yeah, we did, and it's still broken. Sorry. So how should I say it diplomatically? Yes, we updated it, and we still have some hurdles to go through. So that's where we are at the moment. I must say the hurdles were on OS 11. So I didn't have the chance to check the appliance again with the OSC for OS 12, but I still do expect that we have an issue with the upload of a firmware to the appliance itself. But for the moment, what we did is what we created inside of the IGL UMS 12, a feature which is called PXE configuration generator, which is, if I remember right, just creating a JSON file that you can then deploy to your existing PXE appliances that you can then use to download all the required data from the channel. But we are still lacking a knowledge base article on that. So that's also my part. I will take that over and share on the community as soon as possible.
Okay. Just curious, because I don't know a ton of organizations that are using the appliance. Most folks are using something like a System Center or even old school SneakerNet with the USBs, right? But I just thought I'd ask, because I did attempt to use the appliance in my previous life with mixed results. We'll leave it at that.
That's exactly true. I mean, it was working for a long time, right? I mean, I was using it since OS 5 without any issues. But to be technically clear, from what I have seen and self-debugged, we have an issue with the uploading max upload size of an ISO file into the appliance, which is usually a php.ini configuration. And it seems like even if you change that, it takes a long time. So we're working on it. And I hope that we'll come back to the standard fluent way of working than before.
Okay. Just one point on your what you spoke about with the what's available to be upgraded in the upgrade path. You mentioned OS 10 and 11 can be managed by UMS 12?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Okay. Well, hopefully there's not a whole lot of OS 10 out there to be managed by 12.
No, I mean, you still might have the issue that you have issues with our support, right?
Sure.
Which makes sense. I mean, the device is pretty old, the version is pretty old, and from a security perspective, I wouldn't expect someone to still use OS 10. But if you are, I mean, I tested it. It's still working because the communication channel between OS 10 and OS 11 are exactly the same. You have 30,005, 30,001, 8443, and that's it. So the communication and the key store pro that we had in the past are still available. So it will work. Another discussion is on OS 5. Even if it might work with UMS 12, it shouldn't work with UMS 6 either, but you could change the TLS setting. That's the only thing that changed between OS 5, OS 10, and OS 11, because the communication itself never changed until OS 12. So it might work. I would never encourage someone to use OS 5 with UMS 12, but it might work.
Yeah, so OS 5 might, OS 10 and 11 will, but don't try calling our friends at support with OS 10. You're probably going to have a bad time.
Exactly.
Okay, my final kind of comment from the community here, Seb, is I'm an existing customer. What happens to my devices, my let's talk specifically OS 12 here, when my subscription expires? You know, so May 20th, my wake up tomorrow, I forgot to renew my subscription. You know, what happens to my endpoints?
That's a really good one. I mean, if we think and speak about the actual subscription platform and not speaking about what we had in prior. So just for our listeners, in prior time, you bought your OS 11 and OS 11 license, you had a maintenance, and if you was interested in getting hands on ICG, shared workplace, and some other asset inventory tracker features, you could use an EMP additional subscription. So we changed all that stuff already last summer. We shrinked it to only a subscription model, and the subscription model is based on what would work if the subscription is not available anymore. So you are still allowed and able to deploy licenses. And that's something which is definitely something which is extremely important. The only thing that I have to mention is that ICG like that would not work anymore, right? So the ICG, if you just have the one-time communication, will not be able to work anymore. But at the same time, if you think about a device which is in the UMS and connected via ICG, and you had already new subscription deployed, the device will take them and will continue functioning. the session isn't there. We're still working. So beside the shared workspace stuff, which is still the advanced kind of approach from the subscription model, we still work. So you can start your session and so on. Everything is fine. Shared workspace will not work. So if you're, for those of you who are not knowing what shared workspace is, we are deploying configuration application device-based. But at the same time, if you are using your user, which is John Smith, at johnsmithdomain.com, you can log in at your device with that, with a credential, and get your specific sessions based on your Active Directory login. That's something which will not work anymore if you have only the if your subscription was out of date.
So you said a lot of things there, Seb. So is this all documented in the KB site? What will work and what won't work? Okay, so I'll have the show notes too.
Yeah, I will definitely send you the link. I don't have the link in hand, but it's if you go to license, there is a what does all Agile OS 11 subscription mean? And a little bit below that, you have the complete sheet, which is showing with green check marks or red dot, what is working with an active subscription and what is not working with expired subscription. One thing that I have to mention is that obviously support is not there, right? So if you are opening a ticket at the Azure support with a device which is not holding an active subscription, that's definitely a painful thing because it would not work. But all the rest, like deploying a new license will work. So even if the ICG will not work, so deploying profiles via ICG will not work, the licensing will still function. And I just have to think about one thing. I would have to double check, but it's still actual also on the subscription. You can't upgrade the firmware anymore. So if you are on 1108, 1108 230, and your subscription just went out, you will not be able to update to 330.
Okay, understood. So like I said, there's a lot to take in there. So we'll post the KB article in the show notes for users to click on and read through. We just got to circle back on the other question that kind of threw from left field on the communication token. I actually looked it up while we were talking here. And so essentially what happens is during the OBS process, at some point, you're going to get asked to enter a communication token. Not all the time, only sometimes. And what the communication token is, it's actually part of the fingerprint of the certificate that's used to get around it or to resolve the issue is to not use a self-signed certificate. If you use a publicly trusted certificate from a certificate authority, you won't get the prompt for the communication token. So for lab environments, you're always going to see the prompt for communication token where you may be using a self-signed cert from your internal Windows CA. But if you're using something from GoDaddy, Let's Encrypt, things like that, you won't ever see the prompt for the communication token. Did I explain that correctly, Seb?
That's absolutely true. And if you think back about what the ICG did in former times, it was exactly the same, right? So you had your safe signed key store or a public certificate signed key store. And if you just had a safe signed, you had to enter, in addition, the fingerprint, some part of the fingerprint, the area A, B, C, or D from the fingerprint to verify that the safe signed certificate is what you're looking for. But at the same time, we try to avoid that and use the publicly signed one because it just makes things easier.
Yep, 100% agree. So Seb, we've kind of covered all of the, the technical stuff we want to talk about, but we've got to bring up my new favorite part of the podcast is Seb teaches Barry German.
Yeah, let's go.
So, IGL means hedgehog. How do you say thin client in German?
To be honest, thin client too. That's an easy one.
I learned another German word. Okay, I see a printer. How do you say printer?
A Drucker? Yeah, perfect.
Man, wait till I come to Munich next year. I'm going to be fluent. One word at a time every 2 weeks.
That's fine. No, Drucker's fine. No, but Thin Client is also called Thin Client. If you go to France, that's another topic, because as our French-speaking Canadians friends are doing, the French people are doing the same. So English terms are translated one-to-one. So Thin Client means client léger. So really a thin client. Or a light client would be the better translation. But in German, think that.
Cool. So I know three German words now. So wait till I get to Munich, Seb. We're going to be talking about beers and printers and thin clients.
Right. And then you can say Drucker, You can say Think Client in German, and okay,
Autobahn.
Thank you very much. That's good.
That's all I got.
I mean, that's already a great start.
Well, I know the bad words enough. Too, but I won't say that on a podcast.
Yep, a private one then.
Right. Okay. With that being said, let's call this a podcast, Seb. I'll let you get on with your weekend, and the countdown's on to my long weekend. But I think this was a good session. I was happy to go through this. I think it was lots of good information for the audience, for the community. I'm gonna do it again all in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much, Barry, and for setting that up. Really happy to be there. And if any questions are coming up, please join us on join.itucommunity.com and ask your question there. We'll be happy to have you there.
Fantastic. And you get to hang out with me as well, because I'm there a fair bit. So you get Seb and I. There you go. Okay, gentlemen.
I love you.
Seb, have a great weekend.
See you. Bye-bye.